This is joint work with my student Aniket Chakrabarty and also Rian Griffith from VMware. At this point in time, it's pretty widely accepted that for internet services, slow response times are costly. Many studies have shown the correlation. Here I'm citing one such study from Walmart, where they found in their e-commerce site a 100 millisecond delay led to, on average, a drop in about 1% in their revenue. And the important part here is actually the metric, revenue. Revenue needs to be much higher than hardware costs for services to be profitable. Revenue has to cover things like salaries, hardware costs, taxes, etc. So a 1% drop in revenue is a lot. Now, the way we've traditionally dealt with this when dealing with internet services is to scale out as the arrival rate increases, or that is, as more users come, as more profit comes into the system, so that you're keeping the relative ratio of hardware to revenue roughly the same. And we want to do this efficiently, so we often divide a service into multiple tiers, such that each tier can purchase the hardware that's most efficient for that type of software. Here I'm showing some of the typical tiers that you would see in an internet service, such as a front end that may be bandwidth constrained, running load balancers, business logic tier that may run compute intensive servers, maybe energy efficient compute intensive servers, and the data lookup layer, which today, in the past, may have comprised a MySQL database. Today is likely to comprise some NoSQL stores or perhaps some in-memory key value stores, such as Memcached or Redis. And this is going to be the focus of this talk. We're going to focus on this layer. Now, this layer is unique because not only does it scale out as arrival rates grow, but also as data grows. And we're going into the big data era, and intuitively, we tend to think about scaling out as capacity sizes grow, right? So if we run out of DRAM space, we need to buy another DRAM server. But there's another subtle change in the workload with big data. That's that this data lookup layer is actually being accessed more frequently. So it's not just that we have more data to store, but each user's request is actually trying to access and have some processing done on their behalf with that big data. So here I'm citing a recent report from TripAdvisor that said that each user request was accessing 20 to 40 memcached hits per access, per request. This is about an order of magnitude more than what we traditionally see with the typical benchmarks that we use, like Rubis or TPCW. And even this, 20 to 40, is about an order of magnitude less, one or two orders of magnitude less than what we're seeing with some of the emerging services where we're trying to do data-intensive processing under real times or graph processing under real times. This is subtle and very important because now each user request is likely to see at least one data access that falls into the 99th percentile or above. And if the 99th percentile access is slow, as it could be, then that one slow outlier could cause the user to see slow response times, causing this 1% drop in revenue, which we don't want. So the way we solve that problem is you set up a service level objective with performance guarantees. This has been talked about quite a bit recently. The way this is structured is that you basically define what is an outlier by having a very strict definition of what has to be a typical request. 99.9% of my data accesses need to be typical. And you put in a latency bound along with that that is ideally low. So what does typical mean? It means that the request completes within 15 milliseconds. It turns out that meeting these types of strict SLOs is pretty challenging for traditional scale-out approaches. And I'll tell you why a little bit later in the talk. But there's some empirical evidence to suggest that the problem isn't fixed. Even though we have massive scale out today with Memcached and Cassandra stores, there are still a large amount lost due to slow response times. So the premise behind today's talk is that replication for predictability is a dumb idea whose time has come. And this is a line of argument that I'm borrowing from an old Jeff Mogul paper. Basically, the idea is that as hardware and software co-evolve, we may need to revisit some old ideas that were debunked in the past because they improved metrics that just weren't important then. But as times change, we should revisit those things because maybe they can provide value. To scale out via replication for predictability is pretty easy. I'm going to describe the approach, the naive approach, in three sentences. You take your data, replicate it across D nodes. D here stands for a duplicate. You send each access to all D nodes, and you take the first to reply. That's it. So this is an old idea. It was actually studied in some of the early RAID systems. And the problem with it is that as you add resources, you're not adding throughput. So when we're trying to scale out so that we can support higher arrival rates, this didn't make a lot of sense at the time. But what it's really good at is reducing variability. And so we argue that now the time may have come, because if we can reduce in variability, we may be able to strengthen SLOs via scale out. So here I'm showing the data path for Zoolander, which is our middleware for existing key value stores. Zoolander intercepts or interposes on each data access coming from the business logic layer or from clients. And it also comprises a management plane. And this management plane is going to control replication and partitioning in the data lookup layer. The unique aspect here is one of the inputs to Zoolander is the service level objective. So we're going to figure out how to scale and replicate data efficiently to meet a service level objective. And in this talk, what I'm really going to focus on is our approach to do the modeling and management of SLOs. Specifically, we hope that this will really be insightful for many of you here that are practitioners or working in this space, because for us, it led us to a new way to think about predictability and scale out all together in, as it turns out, one equation. What I will not talk about in this paper are the systems contributions from Zoolander, although they are there. So I encourage you to go look at the paper for some of this. But in order to take this old dumb idea and really make it relevant in today's systems, we had to do a couple of, we had to make a few systems contributions. For instance, by using it as a middleware, we're able to reuse existing code and features. So we get the single thread performance of Memcached for free by making the design decision of using it as a middleware. We also get fault tolerance in Zookeeper for free if we choose to use Zookeeper as our backend store. There are also issues you can clearly imagine with sending data to deduplicates and expecting a response from all of them with bandwidth and trying to mitigate the bandwidth. To do that, we reuse existing replicas that are already in practice for fault tolerance and for quorums. And we have optimizations for low overhead by doing persistent TCP connections and a fast read bypass. And we support a wide range of consistency semantics, from eventual consistency all the way up to causal consistency. And all of this is discussed in the paper. I'm not going to really focus on it in this talk, but feel free to read the paper or talk to me after offline. I'll be happy to share with you some of our techniques. Now, in terms of related work, actually the idea of replication for predictability has been revived of late in a couple of different scenarios. So we use the term replication for predictability following from Tchaikovsky's work on SCADs in FAST-10. But there are other works. Cloning, for instance, just recently published at NSDI 13 is very similar. And you'll see some related formulas. And redundant execution, which was published in the Communication of ACM by Dean and Barroso, is quite popular. Now, what I want to point out is some of the things that they do that we don't do, because they may be on your mind if you know of these works. One obvious way, if you have many replicas, to reduce the response time of outliers is to send a request as you normally would, wait for a timeout, and then only use these additional replicas after something's timed out. Then you resend again. And this is great because it lowers bandwidth. It makes a lot of sense for read-only workloads. Now, Zoolander does not currently support this, but this is a design decision because we wanted to provide full support for reads and writes. And you can imagine if you're trying to reduce, improve the SLO on writes and you're only sending writes to some nodes sometimes, that creates a consistency headache. But I mention it especially here because even if you are interested in something like this, it turns out that our models, our approach to manage SLO, extends quite gracefully to this approach as well. So there's something in this talk for you as well. And some of the things that Zoolander will do that I'll mention are we scale out. We're the first approach to scale out to deduplicates. We can also support consistent writes, and we'll talk about managing SLOs. So the remainder of the talk is going to break into two parts. First, we're going to talk about whether or not we can use replication for predictability to strengthen SLOs. What are some of the properties that we need our systems to have? And then we'll talk about whether or not it makes sense to scale out this way. That is it cost effective when we compare it to other ways that we could possibly scale out? Here I'm showing you a CDF of the access times in a three-node zookeeper in our private cloud. What we did was we issued 100,000 writes serially, so there's no queuing in this. This is just pure service times. The important thing to note here about this plot is that it really has two modes, right? There's the first mode that looks like a vertical function that is defining it, and then there's the second mode that is really almost totally horizontal. And so I'm going to use the term fat or heavy tails to describe, in a very general sense, distributions that can't be captured by a single normal or exponential distribution. And what you can see as a result of the fat or heavy tail is that in this example, our 99th percentile is about 99 times larger than our mean. We're not the only people that are observing these types of tails in modern key value stores. So Big Table, in a recent report by Dean, was said to have a 31x of the mean in the 99.9th percentile. And if you take a look in our paper, we're observing this across many different key value stores and across private and public clouds. The root cause for this often is cited as being having to do with the OS, and there was a good paper in SOCC about that. The OS can induce problems by doing poor scheduling or scheduling background jobs at the wrong time, so context switching out and causing a single access to take a lot longer than it would otherwise. I'm not going to go into much detail into the cause for this talk. Now, another key statistical property is shown here. So what we did in this test was we ran two zookeeper setups on two totally independent sets of hardware. And on the x-axis, I'm showing the percentile of, once again, 100,000 requests issued serially. And on the y in test one, and in the y-axis, I'm showing test two. And I'm highlighting the sets of the percentile in execution one that would have been considered the tail. So that is the part that's highlighted here. And the key point to note is that these dots appear all the way up and down. So every quartile in this plot is touched, indicating that there's some degree of cross-execution independence. This is actually a pretty bold claim, so we should talk about why we see this, why we think this is applicable for key value stores. It turns out that your key value store is pretty fast relative to many of the operations that you would do in an operating system, such as swapping in and out another process. So any slight interference is going to have a significant delay and could cause you to go into the 99th percentile. But those interferences are non-deterministic, and they're likely to occur differently on two different instantiations of the key value store. Now, there are other types of workloads for which this may not hold. We've done some prior work on transactions and e-commerce services, and those workloads tend to depend a lot on the service times of the transactions themselves. And then you'll see a stronger correlation here. We're looking at studying those and trying to understand how we can integrate some correlation analysis in future work. So if we have the fat tails and cross-execution independence, we have the basis for our model. So what I'm showing you here is the basic idea behind replication for predictability spread across three nodes or three duplicates. And the question we'd like to answer is, what percentage of data accesses will complete within 15 milliseconds? And henceforth, I'm going to refer to 15 milliseconds or the latency bound as tau. And so the question that we want to ask is, what is the probability then that the first reply that the user sees takes longer than this 15 milliseconds? To answer this, what we want to do is go back to the CDF that we showed earlier. We want to take 15 milliseconds as an index into the CDF to get the probability that on a single node, we would observe a response time greater below 15 milliseconds. Then we subtract one from that, and we treat all of the nodes as independent. When we put all of this together, we have a formula that looks like a geometric series from old calculus books. and this is going to give us an idea of what the service level is. Let's see how accurate it is. So looking at the core model, you can see there are two things that we can vary in this model, tau, the latency bound, and d. In this plot, I'm varying tau, and I'm highlighting two things. First of all, we note that the model's prediction and what we're actually able to achieve with Zoolander are really in sync, both in terms of the number of nines supported, which is how people tend to think about providing these types of service level objectives, and also in terms of the absolute service level that's predicted. I also want to highlight the effect of the heavy tail. We saw before that the service time really started to go out around the 98th percentile, and when you do replication for predictability right at the edge of the heavy tail, you can get really big benefits. And so here, even though we started with a latency bound that was defined as 98th percentile of just one execution, that's a 1.9 service level guarantee, by adding just one more duplicate, we're able to go up to 3 levels of nines. And if we vary D, we see that our model still remains pretty accurate, right? So these lines are right on top of each other as we scale out duplicates. So this part sort of, we tried to answer whether or not SLOs made sense for strengthening, whether or not replication for predictability made sense for strengthening SLOs. Now we want to answer whether or not it can be cost effective. And so what we're going to do is use our performance model. We're going to enhance our performance model so that we can compare replication for predictability against competing scale-out approaches. Now, in enhancing our model, there are a couple of things that we really need to take into account. This cross-execution independence works well when you run on two totally different hardware sets, but in practice, some hardware is going to be shared, namely the data center network. And also, some software is going to be shared, namely you're all running on Linux, or in our case, all of these things are going through our mostly not buggy Zoolander code, right? So these are things that we have to model, and we have done some work on that. But today I want to talk to you about one particularly insightful aspect that is shared across the duplicates. That's that they all share the same request access pattern. So we're taking every access and sending it to all duplicates. So that means they share the same amount of the same request arrival rate and the same queuing delay. This is particularly important because queuing delay is pretty well modeled. And it corresponds well with the traditional approaches that we use for scaling out, whether it's partitioning or traditional replication. Here I'm showing three examples, and I'm sorry that the text is a little bit unclear. Before scale out, this would be what we did if we were only to use replication for predictability. We essentially have the power of just one node to service all of our workload. And the problem with this is, all of these requests have to queue up, and they have to wait for the requests that arrive before them to finish with the processor, creating a long queuing delay. And we'll see that this queuing delay can bite replication for predictability. In the best case, with traditional approaches, we would scale out, we would partition the workload evenly, and we would divide the number of requests perfectly across the machines with no crosstalk, right? Such that the queue length was exactly divided in half. This is the best case. In the real world, there are all sorts of other issues, some of which have been addressed in the talks earlier, such as hotspots, convoy effects, consistency, etc. But our key insight is that we can use this best case analysis to compare replication for predictability against traditional approaches, so we can figure out when replication for predictability is definitely going to be better than the traditional approaches, not even taking into account all of the degradation we may see from hotspots. The reason why this may happen is because replication for predictability is really having an effect on the service time, the perceived service time, whereas your traditional approaches are attacking the queuing delay. So it's a question of trading off, which one do we want to improve? To capture this, what we did was, you know, we defined queuing delay as a function of the arrival rate, and the arrival rate is really a function of a global arrival rate divided by R, which is the number of replicas that we have. The number of traditional scale-out replicas that we have. So our post-queuing delay latency bound is our original latency bound minus the queuing delay. And just to highlight this in sort of the big full model, or at least full model for this talk, we're able to predict three key parameters. The service level, that is 99.9%, we're able to vary three key parameters. R, the replication, the traditional scale-out factor, and D, the replication for predictability scale-out factor. So let's see what happens when we trade these things off. On the x-axis, I'm showing the normalized arrival rate per node. And on the y-axis, I'm showing the expected service level that's achieved. So the first question that we asked was, can replication for predictability strengthen SLOs? And can it do it better than some alternative approaches? Well, clearly the answer is yes, because we can see that if in the case where we have the too small d, one duplicate, meaning we only use traditional replication, we're able to achieve service levels that you just can't achieve with traditional replication. That is, just attacking the queuing delay isn't enough. Sometimes you have to go after the service time. But it's not a panacea. Really, the best approach depends on the arrival rate. So replication from predictability suffers from this falling off the cliff problem, where eventually the arrival rate grows such that one node can't process all of the workload. Oh, but since we sent all of our requests to all nodes, that one node represents everybody and we fall off the cliff. We're not able to meet our service level for any of the accesses. So really, it looks like a mixed approach is best for handling anything other than absolutely heavy arrivals per node. So the last thing that I'll show you is a case study with Zoolander at scale. So TripAdvisor released some details on its Memcache setup. And what we did was we set up Zoolander with Cassandra as the backend, and we leased 144 EC2 instances, and we ran it up to 40 million accesses per second. That may be 40 million accesses per hour. And we... And so the problem that we addressed was trying to adapt Zoolander at night, where we know we observe a diurnal request arrival rate, so the request arrival rate would drop down to something like 20 million accesses, looking at some past traces. And so what we wanted to do was choose the most cost-effective approach. The question is, at nighttime, should we save energy by turning off servers, saving the cost of running those servers at nighttime? Or should we save the cost of SLO violations by doing replication for predictability at this time? And on the x-axis, what we're doing is we're showing the benefit as we vary the cost of the SLO violation. On the y-axis, we're showing the relative cost, that is the energy savings approach divided by the replication for predictability approach. And so numbers above one mean that the energy savings approach is doing much better. Numbers below 100% mean that our approach is doing better. So in this study, Zoolander was able to reduce SLO violations by 32%, which is a lot. But we always have to think in terms of being cost effective that depends on the cost of the SLO violation. So you can see to the far left, when we deal with situations where an SLO violation means nothing, this approach gives way to the energy savings approach. But in private clouds, under realistic settings, this becomes cost effective very quickly, because there the benefit of saving energy isn't as high because you've already invested in your infrastructure. In EC2, it's a little bit more hairy, because in EC2, when you pay for a node, you're also paying for that infrastructure cost. So by turning off a node, you're saving quite a bit more, though we still can become cost effective. So the question you may ask is, where does a real service fall along this plot? We looked at TripAdvisor's financial statements and a report on the number of visitors they had over a quarter. So we estimated what an SLO violation may be for TripAdvisor. And it turns out that we are pretty close to the break-even point, just a little bit better, for the EC2 case, and we excel in the private cloud case as well. So in conclusion, what to take away from this talk? One, fat tails are common, expected, and hard to remove in key-value stores. So Zoolander is able to mask the effects of these outliers by using redundant execution. And we're able to do this at scale. If there's one key point, it's that traditional approaches, partitioning and replication, should be used in conjunction with replication for predictability when we scale out. And what we think we've provided here is a really nice analytic framework where we can consider all of these things together in one model. And I'll take questions.
Chris, I think this is really cool stuff because a lot of people just look at average response time and sort of ignore this variability, which is really important. So I have a couple thoughts about this because one of my colleagues is a real-time like embedded systems person, so he's all about deadlines and meeting guarantees and things like that. So we've talked a bit with him about what techniques they use to deal with these kinds of things. So they do things like more carefully tracking your resources, like leasing out resources to particular pieces of data to try to give you better guarantees that something will be in the cache or something like that, and also deadline-aware scheduling. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about how those techniques complement these or what effect
yeah.
is.
So with your data lookups, it's some of the older techniques that could operate on the scale of, say, few hundred milliseconds really aren't applicable here because we're talking on the order of microseconds.
Right.
So specifically doing scheduling, it's just not going to work. Once you schedule out, it's already too late. Other options, so other related work has looked at things like throwing out the operating system. So inserting a fast path, RDMA through Memcached. This is a definitely a good idea, and we've been looking into similar techniques. More generally, for the enterprise cluster domain, there's still a need for something that is simple, right? A way to improve your SLO without having to go in and become a hacker or without having to rely on custom development, right? And so that's where we think this sort of falls in, right? Something that gives you a scale-out option,
right?
Scale-out hammer.
I guess one other follow-up that's... So you said at the beginning that a single web page access can have 30 to 40 of these lookups. What do you think about if you batch those, so you're processing many of these requests in one group, then maybe some of these scheduling overheads aren't going to be as significant because they would just be applied to that group instead of each one. Does that make any sense? Or is it still going to be just as bad?
I'll think about it, but now I'll say it would be just as bad.
Okay.
Thanks.